It's Vegan Freak Radio number 108 for the 23rd of July, 2009.
Kids, the bugs and the birds fascinated us. They were just like us. And we were taught to slam the door. It's not cool to feel too much. But some of us break free. According to you, I'm a vegan freak. That's what you think.
Coming to you from high atop their elite fortress of moral superiority, here are your protein-deficient hosts, Bob and Jenna.
Hey, everybody, this is Bob.
And Jenna.
And we're back again.
Finally.
Yes, it's taken a long time, but we are back.
And the elite fortress has moved.
The elite fortress is now in the elite city of moral superiority.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, or Killadelphia, or the Illadelphia.
I've heard many different terms, many different terms, but that's where we are. We're in Philadelphia. So the move was way more complex than we both thought it would be.
Yeah, it like took over our lives and just it was insane.
It was pretty nuts, yeah. And that kind of explains why it's taken us so long to get back to the show.
Not to mention that it's been taking you all week so far to set up the studio.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The part of Philadelphia we live in, there are gigantic radio towers. They are, I don't know how many, they're huge. They're huge. And the radio towers, they're extremely powerful. They're like on the top of the hill, the radio towers for the entire city. And maybe like the whole region. And I was hooking up the studio and I was like picking up the Golden Oldies station. You know, like the Golden Oldies. And I was picking it up like through the microphones, through the wires and like the things in our studio. We're picking it up. And you may actually still hear it on occasion. I was able to kind of narrow it down to one set of inserts that I was able to kind of move and play with and get to work. But it's still there. I can kind of hear it sometimes. So I think the solution is to, for us to build our studio inside a Faraday cage.
The hell is that?
A Faraday cage is like this. I mean, I know there's someone out there who probably is a physicist that's going, you're giving an inaccurate description. your description of a Faraday cage is a little too weak. And I'd be like, Shut up! But basically, it's just a way of blocking radio signals.
Mm-hmm.
So radio interference. I think we just need to, you know, build one, put the studio inside one of those.
Okay, and what does that involve?
It involves building a giant metal cage around the room.
Oh, okay, no problem.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
I'm sure our landlord will have no problem with that.
Actually, I don't think he would.
Okay, well, you never know.
I doubt he would. Probably as long as we were to take it out when we left, it'd probably be no problem.
And you'd probably never get a cell phone call ever again either.
Not in this room, no. Right. That's actually the point. That's the point.
Right.
A Faraday cage or Faraday shield is an enclosure formed by conducting material or by a mesh of such material. Such an enclosure blocks out external static electrical fields. Faraday cages are named after English scientist Michael Faraday, who invented them in 1836. There you go. So that's what I think we need. So if you hear the Golden Oldies in the background, it's not on purpose. We don't like the oldies, but it's been driving me insane. And here's the other thing that annoys me. Like, I know that anyone out there who does any audio work, you're like, oh, you're buying cheap cables. No. I don't buy cheap cables.
You don't?
Because I know that kind of, I bought a cheap cable once, mm-hmm. and I had interference from another thing. And so I don't buy cheap cables anymore. Anyway, that's what we've been dealing with. So we live in Philadelphia now, and if the radio waves from the towers don't kill us, the dioxin in the soil probably will. If that doesn't kill us, a stray bullet might. And if that doesn't kill us, who the hell knows what will?
SEPTA, I don't know. Yeah.
SEPTA. Yes, that's the public transportation system. No, in all seriousness, very happy to be here, but it's just taken us a very long time to kind of get everything sorted out. And for those of you out there who are like, I don't want to sound like an old man, but you know, back when I was like, 20 or whatever, actually up until all through graduate school even, moving was always a pain in the ass,
mm-hmm.
but it was a matter of packing like a couple boxes and my crap ass futon in some van, you know?
Right.
It's not really like that anymore.
No.
It's like we got to move, and then we have to move the business, and then we have to like do insurance. We sold our old house, and that was like a mess. And
yeah, we're moving to a new state, so that involves all kinds of new things. We have to get new licenses, etc.
Yeah, I know none of you really care, but we're right. telling you anyway, because that's how it goes. So that's just how it is. Hey, this song. I mean, this song is called "The Sound of Philadelphia." Listen to this shit. Oh. Cued in properly.
Oh, okay.
We got new soundboard software.
Yes, for a Mac. Our operation is 100% Mac right now.
Right now.
For the time being.
We need a soulful voice. This is really good. Actually, I can't do it.
I have a very high-pitched voice.
Coming to you. Philip.
There you go, yeah. Yeah.
The song is so groovy. I really dig it.
It's called TSOP, man, The Sound of Philadelphia. It's by MFSB, featuring The 3 Degrees. Okay, so while we'll talk about Philadelphia, I'll leave this playing.
Okay, because you know you want to groove to it. You do.
I'm going to groove to it. What we're talking about. So anyway, we moved, and it was a lot of crap to move. We basically sold, recycled, or threw away everything mm-hmm. and started over. Mm-hmm. And except for our studio, we kept the studio.
Yes.
So, and we kept our computers. And we kept our TV. But the rest of that shit, no way, man. We had a yard sale. We got rid of it. We're moving on. So it was nice. It's been liberating to live here.
It is. It's incredible. Like we'll just be somewhere. I'm like, I love living here. I love being in the city, mm-hmm. and just being here in this city. It's awesome.
I like it too. That's the best.
It is.
I want a little like roving band of soul singers.
Backup
to follow
singers.
Me. Yeah. I don't sing. I'm horrible. I have absolutely zero vocal talent when it comes to singing, but it'd be cool to have like a little chorus to follow
yeah,
me.
Yeah, there you go.
Be like my entire life would be like a Greek play. My entire life would be like a Greek play. Just have a little chorus following me. You know, that's what he said. You know, it'd be really cool.
Right.
Like, I would like that. I'd be into that. So, yeah. Anyway, moving here has been cool. It's such a contrast to rural America. Like,
it is.
Living in the middle of rural America, it was like, there was just nothing.
Yeah.
And then we move here, and it's like, oh my God.
It's like, I mean, is that like, we're new to urban areas, but we're coming here, I feel like such a country bumpkin, because I'm like, oh my God, I got 5 bars on my cell phone.
I know.
I have 3G now.
I grew up here, yeah. And it's like, I still feel like...
I know, like, I like walk out back at our new house and like look at the airplanes. Like,
I know.
Airplanes! We have an airport! I don't have to drive 3 hours to go to the airport anymore.
It's cool, there was a... I felt like such a country bumpkin. I was like, well, look, Ma, there's an airplane flying overhead. So... No, it's been strange to move to here. But it's been strange in the sense, like, I'm back here and was able to... I live in the neighborhood I grew up in, and the neighborhood has changed a lot. But I was also, like, able to walk Jenna to the grade school that I went to.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird. So, it's just weird being back here. I don't know. It's a different place in a lot of ways, but it's not different in a lot of other ways. And I don't want to bore the fuck out of you describing how it is and it's not different. But, yeah. So, it's good to be in a city... You know, before when it used to be, do we feel like driving half an hour to the grocery store? And now it's like, do we feel like driving
2 minutes?
A minute to the grocery yeah. store, and which one? And
right.
And you know, which vegan restaurant are we going to go to tonight?
Yes,
and
we have a choice of all vegan restaurants. Like there are multiple, not just one vegan restaurant, but multiple all vegan restaurants where you can choose anything on the menu.
Yeah, I mean, like this past week when we went out with Ida and Mr. Fong, you know, and we went to. Milan, right? And just had brunch there. It was fantastic. You know, we just went for a vegan brunch. I had a fucking vegan omelet. Okay, I know. For those of you who live in, you know, everybody in Portland's like, well, Portland's better. Well, you know what? Fuck you. Yes, Portland probably is better, but I hate Portland, okay? I'm sorry. So, no offense. I mean, you like Portland. Fantastic. Good for you. But I've been there. I don't like it for a variety of reasons. They're actually... pre-vegan reasons that I don't like Portland. I'm sure as a vegan, it's a fantastic place to be.
I'm sure.
But, I'm just an East Coast kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, if I were a hip-hop artist, I'd be totally into the East Coast thing. I'd be like, fuck the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be out there shooting those bitches. Anyway, yeah, so I'm just an East Coast guy. No, I don't know. I haven't been to Portland in probably 10 years. 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
12 years almost. So, I don't really know. I'm sure it's a lot better now, but it just struck me as a sort of place where it's like, how many pedicab drivers and hipsters can you cram together into one space and have it still work? I mean, what can I say? I apologize. No, I don't. No, if you like Portland, good for you. I'm just an East Coast guy. And it's just the way I am. So, and I'm unapologetic, as usual. When am I not unapologetic?
This is true.
So, yes.
But yeah, we've been eating ourselves silly. Because not only are there a lot of vegan restaurants, there are a lot of vegan-friendly restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
And like you said, multiple grocery stores. Like, we can actually go to Trader Joe's now. So nice. Stuff there is so cheap. I love it.
It's funny. It's funny, like, watching you get excited about buying vegetables. Sometimes I think, man, you are...
I'm easy to please.
That's why...
Just take me to the grocery store. Take me to a nice grocery store. There's lots of stuff to choose from.
Well, I can't imagine why else you would be with me, if, you know, because that's why you're easy to please. You are not picky. Mm. So, anyhow. So, it's been cool. It's been cool to be back. And, you know, it's Philadelphia. So, what the hell can you say? But here's a little song about Philadelphia. This is a Philadelphia song, The Dialogue. This is by Matt Nathans. And I... just found this on iTunes. We were searching for Philadelphia songs. There are plenty, and we will probably play more of them. They're all very bad.
Not all of them.
Okay.
A lot of them.
I would say like a good 80% of them are bad, right? Like that song we just played, like, that's good, but it's not good.
Well, it's because it's from the 70s.
It's cheesy. I mean, it's good insofar as it's like it oozes. It oozes. But this song, I think, is pretty funny.
Philadelphia, you're in my heart.
I wrote a little song for you.
P-H-I-L-A-D-E-L-P-H-I-A. You're fucking sexy bitches. Wicked fucking sexy bitches. I love the way you rock. Will Smith's from this town, Cinderella's from this town, you rock. Rocky is from this town, and he rocks. His name is fucking Rocky. It's Rock with a Y. And Burgess Meredith died, helping Rocky live. And he rose like a phoenix. I'm gonna do the same for you. I'm gonna go down for you. Burning, burning, burn. I'm gonna rise like a phoenix. I'm gonna fucking rise like a phoenix. Like Jesus. Oh Christ. I love Philadelphia. Got too much love. You cracked the Liberty Bell. So much love, you fucking cracked cast iron.
There's more. A little more. A little bit of dialogue.
That's my Philadelphia, so I'm working on it. It's not really done. It's at this, like, crucial point. Like, where do you go? Philadelphia, Motown. No. Good to see you. Cough syrup is kicking in. I'm like, Philadelphia. Sunshine State. Not a state. It's like not a fucking... It's awesome. Ah, the rock and rollers don't need to be smart, right? They just gotta put a big cucumber in their pants and just dance around.
Works for me. Anyway. So, yes, that's the Philadelphia
but it,
song.
It is always sunny in Philadelphia, by the way.
Is it?
No, it's not sunny right now.
No,
it's
it hasn't.
Cloudy.
It hasn't really been. But anyway, enough of that. I'm sorry to come off like some country, you know, country hick. But I've been a country hick for how many years now? 7 years, 6 years? We've lived in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. And previous to that wasn't super urban either, so.
Yeah, but Ithaca's different.
Yeah.
Ithaca is okay.
It is.
Ithaca's a good place to be a vegan.
It is a very good place to be vegan.
So that doesn't really count. We weren't vegan then, but you know, it's a good place to be a vegetarian.
It is.
We were weak-willed
vegetarians
then.
Misguided.
We were misguided and uninformed vegetarians with very few excuses for not going vegan. So we went vegan.
We did.
Yes. And we hope you do the same as well. So anyway, just I was gonna write a blog entry about this, but I'm so overwhelmed in a sense that there was this time. Well, I should just start over. Like in our house, we've got this container, this clear container for dog biscuits, right? And the dog biscuits, I have to be careful saying this.
Yeah, be careful. Because the dogs have taken up residence in our new studio.
Yes,
as well.
Of course. They're always in the studio when we're doing the show.
Of course.
So we have this container full of dog biscuits. And, you know, it's like the keys to the kingdom. These are the things that get whatever we need done. So if we need the dogs to do something, the biscuits are the way to pave the path there. But they love the biscuits. Emmy in particular loves the biscuits. One day when we lived in our old house, we left the biscuit container in a place where Emmy could get to it. And I think she got bored. And I know it's Emmy because Mole had never, ever, ever done this before. I don't think it even occurred to him.
Mm-mm.
So this is Emmy. Emmy knocked the container over. I mean, it holds a whole box of dog biscuits. So she knocked the container over. And we get home and there are dog biscuits all over the floor. And she's running over. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
She's running over to each biscuit. There's still some left by the time we get home. And she's running over to each biscuit and she picked them up in her mouth. And she would like, you could see her think about it, like, can I put this in my belly? Can I? And she's like, bleh, spit it out. Living here, I feel like Emmy. I mean, like, I feel like this place, I've eaten so much good food in the last couple weeks. Like, I feel like, wow, can I eat that too?
Yeah.
So, it's right. Horrible.
It is.
It's horrible that way. But
good, but bad.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. It's good, but bad. Let's just say that, you know, the running is very good for combating some of that.
Yes, indeed.
Excessive consumption. So, yeah. Also, to go back, I apologize if I offended any of you Portlanders out there. I know we have some people in Portland who listen. And in fact, some very loyal vegan freak
of course,
type people.
Of course.
It's just the way I am. I say things. I get in trouble. People get mad at me. But don't get mad at me. I'm just another asshole on the internet. You know, really, when it comes down to it. So, also, I wanted to tell you about a strange experience I had, all of you out there. And this is one of those, like, people write to us about things like this, and they very mm-hmm. rarely happen to me.
Right.
But this time something happened to me. So, pull up a chair. We're going to have a little talk. No, I went to get a new pair of glasses and new contacts because I was starting to realize when we were living up in the middle of nowhere, like, you can drive around and you don't really know if your eyes are getting any worse because there's really nothing to look at except fucking trees and, you know, birds and shit. And trees and birds are fantastic, but after a while, it's like, okay, you know, ooh, a bald eagle, another one. Okay, so, and actually, it was like that where we used to live.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, it's just like you get to a point where you don't even really notice. So moving down here, though, there are things I need to focus on, like street signs and things like that. And I started to realize that my eyes were, my prescription was out of date. No. So I went to this place and where I used to get glasses and all they do is the frames and lenses. They build them in house. So I said, where can I go get a good exam? Because I want to get some new glasses. And they sent me this doctor and they said, look, this guy's good. He'll give you a good exam, but he's a little quirky. So I said, well, what's quirky mean? And the woman said, well, he's going to talk to you about vitamins and stuff. So I said, well, I don't really, you know, whatever. That's fine with me. I don't really care as long as the exam's good. And he's like, yeah, he's a really nice guy, but he's going to talk to you about the stuff. And as long as you don't mind that, fine. So they gave me the card. I made an appointment with him and I went in and, you know, he's a pretty nice guy. And he gave me a very thorough eye exam and everything seemed cool. And then at the end of the exam, he starts saying to me, so tell me about what you do and don't eat. And I was like, that's curious. So I said, well, for starters, I don't eat anything that comes from an animal, no animal products at all. So he looks at me and says, so do you eat eggs? I think, okay, does this guy having difficulty with categorical organization? Like, you know,
it comes from an animal.
Okay, first off, he's an eye doctor, right? So why is he asking me about my diet?
Right.
But secondly, he's actually an MD. He's a real, he's not just a, what do you call him? Optometrist?
Yeah.
Optometrists,
I think, are the ones that aren't MDs. I don't know. I'm sure somebody's going to write to us and correct us and tell us what the correct thing is, but don't worry, we'll look it up in Wikipedia.
There you go. We will.
Okay.
We will look it up. We promise. We promise. I know it annoys people. Like, I know. I hear things on the radio sometimes mm-hmm. that annoy the shit out of me, and I want to strangle people on the radio. I know. save your ire for NPR. Write letters to them, and maybe they'll read one of yours on Thursday. Anyway, the point is, he was an MD, an eye doctor, mm-hmm. right? So, his point was, you know, I mean, I can understand why he might say something. He's a medical doctor. So he's asking me, you know, do you eat eggs? So I said, no, I don't eat eggs. And he said, well, why don't you eat eggs? And I said, well, I don't know if you want me to go into a lot of depth here. I said, imagine you have other appointments, but I have objections with the entire system that produces eggs and with the confinement and the rearing of chickens and their status as property. So he looks at me very quizzically and he says, do you know you're taking a political position by doing that? I started laughing because I was like, yeah,
that's the point. That,
exactly. So I said, well, yeah, that's the point of doing what I'm doing. I mean, I'm not doing it just for random, you know, for any random reason. Right. Like I have a very well thought out rationalization and I have a very well thought out, you know, ethical foundation for why and moral foundation why I do these things. He said, I said, that's interesting. So he said, I'm still having a hard time understanding why. And I said to him, well, look, if you want, I can break it down for you. I've written two books on the topic. we can sit here and have a discussion about it. I'm happy to do it. But I said, imagine that, you know, you don't want to really listen to a small lecture on it. I mean, I used to teach courses on it at the university. If you want, I can go through it with you. But I said, you know, you probably don't want to go through it. So he's like, well, no, not really. So he said, look, you do realize, though, that by not eating eggs, you're putting your health behind your principles. So you're putting your principles ahead of your health. Mm-hmm. I said, well, how is that? He said, well, an egg is this great form of nutrition. He said the egg itself has this density of nutrients encapsulated in a single package that you can't find anywhere else in the grocery store in that configuration. And he said that the density, the nutritional density of that egg is so important. He said it's almost a shame not to eat them because they're so good for you in that regard. So I said to him, all right, fine, look, I'm not going to debate with you whether or not eggs are nutritionally fantastic or not. I said, obviously they have nutrients in them, right? And they have vital nutrients in them. I mean, presumably they're vital to people that would eat them, right? But I said, is it not possible for me to get everything in that egg from somewhere else? He said, yeah. I said, okay, so if it's possible for me to get everything that's in that egg from somewhere else, and I don't like, and I have moral objections to the ways in which these things take place to produce that egg, why should I consume an egg? And he said, well, because it's all encapsulated in that single package. So I said, okay, fine. I said, look, I'm not going to eat eggs. You know, you can tell me whatever you want. I've been a vegan for years. I'm fine. I'm healthy. We're not really going to have any discussion about it. You know, this is where I'm at. He said, well, okay. You know, he said, I don't want to give you the wrong idea. You're a patient of mine. I care about your health. I'm not trying to be argumentative. I just want to see you do as well as you possibly can. I said, thank you. I appreciate that concern, but you know, I'm good. I've talked to a nutritionist about what I should and shouldn't be eating and all that. So, he left the eggs alone for a bit and then he said, so do you eat anything from the sea? So I said, seaweed? And he said, good. But I want you to take a kelp tablet every day anyway. Said, okay. So I didn't go get my kelp tablets yet, but I think I will. You know, a kelp tablet can't hurt. But it was one of those experiences like people call and send us a voicemail about. And I was actually had one of those because I had those so rarely.
Yeah, I know.
So it was interesting though. But he was, I think he had just had this idea that I was the vegan freak in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
I felt like a total crazy man at that. I mean, because
he could not fathom it at all.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
I didn't really feel like a crazy man, but what I mean to say is that I could feel him looking at me like I was a nut job.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Like the way I look at like the pro-life people,
mm-hmm.
or the way I look at like that, I love my gun people.
Right.
Like that, I could feel him looking at me like the way I look at those crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the moral of the story is that everyone has an inherent humanity that needs to be respected.
Okay.
That was hard to say. Anyway,
well,
so that
it's fine. It's weird to me though that he has never really considered the fact that that is a moral stance, like that people take. You know, it sounded like a new thing to him. Like he's probably never met a vegan before, I guess, or an ethical vegan.
I guess not. But I mean, how rare could we be?
Not that rare.
I don't know. We're fewer, you know, like we're, what, 1% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
True.
Or less.
True. And not every vegan is an ethical vegan either.
And not every vegan who says they're a vegan is a vegan.
This is true.
So, I mean, I think the number of true ethical vegans is depressingly
low.
Is depressingly low.
Yes.
Unfortunately. So, yeah, that was my little experience I wanted to share with all of you about what it was like to actually have to go through that. But I could see how, like me, I'm kind of a dick. You know, I'm just like, I'll argue with anybody about anything, anytime, because it's how I am. I look for arguments. When I'm bored, I argue with people. When I'm not bored, I argue with people. I'm just an arguer. It's just the way I am. I don't mean to be that way necessarily, but so I don't mind arguing with people, but I could see how if someone were not as much of a douchebag as I am, it would be difficult for them.
I'm not a douchebag because you like to argue. You just like to argue.
Okay, well, thank you. I could see how it would be difficult for them to stare that down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I can see where someone might get flustered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have someone who, doctors have these positions of authority in our culture, which is weird. They shouldn't.
Yeah.
You know, but, well, Foucault wrote a book about this. go read it. Yes. So that's it. We've just been busy with all kinds of things.
We have been.
But we're back.
Yes.
I hope more regularly, as we had promised. We're a little later than we had promised, but I hope regularly.
Yeah, well, now that we have the studio set up.
Now we have the studio set up, it's very easy. What do you mean?
Do you have to tweak anything else?
Oh, I always have to tweak something.
Tweak my knobs.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we'll be back. We're off in them. So what else?
Well, we also have now a new segment we like to do every so often.
Indeed.
And that is a segment with Gary Francione.
Yeah, every so often we'll have him on the show. So yeah.
What, you're looking at me like, you didn't want to go there yet.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
I don't have anything else to talk about. I'm all out. I mean, look, we spent so long putting the studio together today.
Yeah, we're like, oh my God, what are we going to talk about?
I thought we just need to sit down and get a show out. Like, all right. This point, it's like, what the fuck? We don't have much of anything to talk about at the moment. And it's not that there's not much to talk about. It's just that we're so insane trying to get everything to work. And then we sat down, let me just, a quick aside.
Mm-hmm.
We sat down to do the show, and then the sound from the soundboard is only coming out of one ear,
mm-hmm.
and our mic levels are bad, and I didn't hear the golden oldies yet, but they're coming. They're coming in, I'm sure of it. I hope not, but, you know, I'm sure they will. So it's just been a total mess. It was just like, everything was just like...
Computer says nah.
Just like, nah. And, you know, and then Jenna looks, I'm running around all frazzled and crazy and all this other stuff. And then, I don't know, Jenna just looks at me like, wow, what is up with you? And I'm just like,
Jenna, you're the smartest person I know.
Why can't you fix this?
Because you're the audio expert.
And then I'm like, oh, I'm not the expert. I'm this guy who started doing a show with a, you know, recording it on a MacBook way mm-hmm. back when with a stupid USB microphone. And then by necessity, we had to learn. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
We've been doing the show for like 4 years now, haven't we?
Oh God, it feels like a decade. would this be our fourth year?
I think so. Or yeah,
third,
fourth.
I don't know.
Wow, it's been a long time.
It has been. We've changed a lot over that time.
We have.
But anyway, messing with the studio, I was just like,
Tina, something weird is going on.
I couldn't figure out what was up. So, yeah, it was a total disaster. Anyway, it's together now, and hopefully it's recording. I have no idea. I think it is. It looks like it is. But, you know, sometimes I could stop this thing, and it may not be recording. And then I'm just going to crawl up in a ball on the floor and sob very loudly, very large, sad man tears. Like that. Yeah. So, yes. Anyway, Professor Francione is on our show to pick the low-hanging fruit of the animal rights movement. That's what we should call it.
Yeah.
What's what we should call it?
Call his segment?
Picking the low-hanging fruit with Professor Gary Francione. Going after... Yeah, go ahead.
But anyway, we're going to have him here to do a commentary every once in a while. As many of you have known, he's been on our show in the past, and we usually have him on for... many hours at a time, just because that's how much we have to talk to him about.
Of course.
About his new books and that kind of thing. But I think now instead we're going to have him just do a commentary about something he's been thinking about and, you know, we're always thinking about. And so a little bit shorter segments just to have him on and get him out there.
Yeah, man, you get the best of abolitionist veganism here at Vegan Free Radio.
There you go.
We go to great lengths to bring you the absolute best that we can in veganism. So with that said, here is our segment with Professor Francione for the week. The second most frequently asked question we receive after when is your next podcast is, when is Gary Francione doing his podcast? Well, we don't know when Gary Francione is doing his podcast, and we're not his fucking secretaries, but Gary is on our show, and we think we'll get him on every so often to talk about issues of interest to him, things he's thinking about, and we thought this would be a good way to kind of get him out there until he can get the legs to get his podcast together. So welcome back to Vegan Freak Radio, Gary.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Jenna. You know, I would love to get the podcast thing going, but you have to understand, I have sort of a phobia about technological things, and you two were kind enough to come to my house and help me set up the equipment, and it is sitting, Bob, on the dining room table exactly where we haven't used the dining room table since you and Jenna came and set that stuff up. So there it sits, and I'm eventually I will get to it, I promise. There's been a lot of work to do, and I'm not somebody who naturally takes to the technical stuff. So my doing that would require my suffering a great deal of anxiety and then putting the work into it. But I will. I promise I'll do it. In the meantime, if you will have me as a guest on your show from time to time, that would be fun. I could get some ideas out and do things that way.
Well, no, hey, it'll be our pleasure to have you on. So
thank you.
Today, you know, what are you interested in talking about today?
Well, it's an interesting discussion I've been seeing in several of the forums, and that is this notion about it comes up in two contexts, and that is the notion of who is the exploiter, who is an exploiter. It comes up in two contexts. The first context it comes up in is when people are challenging welfare reform and saying that we really should, not pursue welfare reform. It's not a good idea, both as a matter of theory and as a matter of practice. The response is often, why are animal people arguing amongst each other? Shouldn't we be arguing with the exploiters? And this this comes up quite a bit. It also comes up in another context that I'm less interested in talking about right now, and that's when people are trying to justify acts of violence. They will sometimes say, well, it's all right to go after these institutionalized exploiters because they're doing things which they shouldn't be doing. And again, you know, that raises the question, you know, who's – I understand what an institutional exploiter is, but who's an exploiter? I mean, if you think it's perfectly acceptable to use violence against some, agribusiness corporation, why don't you think it's acceptable to use violence against somebody that you live with who isn't vegan? Maybe you should do direct action against people that you live with.
Oh, no, don't even say that.
Well, I mean, no, I'm not.
I know.
As somebody who promotes ahimsa and nonviolence, I don't believe in any violence. But I just think this is curious sort of, you know, who is an exploiter? Now, look, I'm perfectly willing to acknowledge that, you know, that large corporations and all large corporations and corporate enterprises, not just those involved in the food industry, whatever, tell us all sorts of things which are false and encourage us to believe all sorts of things and facilitate our desires in all sorts of ways. But we're the ones who ultimately make the choice. And I think that, you know, this idea that we're, you know, there's this notion that seems to be somewhat popular, and that is that we're a bunch of it's almost a deterministic sort of approach, that we don't really have any choice. We're just doing what they tell us to do, and they're creating the desires in us. Well, to some degree, that's true. They create the predicate for that. They allow us to satisfy our desires, but they're just an outside cause. What really is the more important cause is our desire for things. They provide the things for us to desire, but we're the ones who desire the things. We're the ones who create the demands. I also agree that corporations, you know, lie to us about, you know, the health benefits of various foods that they're promoting and all sorts of things. But again, I mean, you know, we live in a world in which we can get access to true information, so we can make it's not that we're forced in any way to make these choices. We're the ones who make the choices, and I really think that, you know, we create the demand. If we stop demanding, then you know, they put their capital into other things. Most capitalists are by definition indifferent to where they put their capital. If we stop demanding animal products, then people who have capital invested in animal in those industries will move their capital elsewhere. So, I mean, we don't even have to get into the discussion about whether we should have capitalism. We could say, look, just with respect to the animal issue, you know, we're the ones who create the demand, and if we stopped demanding, that money would move somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think we've all had the experience of talking with people who say to us, well, you know, I'm a vegetarian, but, you know, I still like cheese pizza and ice cream, or, you know, I can't give – I mean, I frequently get this, I can't give up cheese, or I need milk in my tea and things like that. Well, that's exploitation. I mean, you know, that's – you know, if you're not a vegan, then you're exploiting animals. You may be exploiting animals even if you are a vegan, but you certainly are exploiting animals if you aren't a vegan. And so when somebody says that, you know, the idea that this is a person that doesn't have choice, that this is a person who's being manipulated by, you know, the bad guys, the corporate bad guys or whatever, I think is sort of silly. And I think really what's going on here is, and it's ironic because it's an instance of exactly what these people are talking about when they talk about manipulation. The large animal organizations are largely groups, the membership of which is not vegan. So they have a lot of, you know, dog and cat lovers who are meat eaters and mucus drinkers and whatever, and what these large groups do basically is they sell, you know, I'm seeing this now more clearly than I've seen it before, and that is large organizations serve the same function that the Catholic Church did in the medieval time. They sell indulgences. they say, well, you know, yeah, continue doing what you're doing. Give us money. We'll absolve you. And we'll do welfare reform because it's all got to be incremental anyway. And so, you know, they sell indulgences. And you know, I'm not saying that they're doing that intentionally, but that's really the sort of the social function that they're serving. And I think that, you know, the reality is if they started to say that, well, their members were exploiters, then that would, you know, that would have economic repercussions. And, you know, it's interesting when you have a group like PETA. There was an interview that Dan Matthews did a while back in, I think, the Orange County Weekly in California, in which he said half of the members half of the membership of PETA is vegetarian, the other half think it's a good idea. Well, when he says half of them are vegan, or vegetarian rather, he's certainly not saying that half of them are vegan. I don't know what he means by vegetarian, but I certainly do not suspect that half of the membership of PETA is vegan. But he's saying the other half isn't even vegetarian. And so if you have an organization like that, and then, you know, and you figure that the other large organizations probably have fewer people who are even interested in veganism, and, you know, with the large ones being composed primarily of people who are, you know, who are interested in dogs and cats and other companion non-humans that they have living with them and things, and many of those people don't really see the food issue as it's not even on their radar screen. So we really can't start saying, well, they're participating in animal exploitation, because those are the people who write the checks. So what we end up doing is demonizing the farmers, the furriers, you know, and all of the institutional exploiters. And I certainly don't think they should be doing what they're doing, but they're doing what they're doing because we ask them to do it. And I think that this is a, you know, really very curious. And I think that those people who have bought into this, you know, that the correct way of looking at this is to demonize the institutional exploiters, are doing exactly what they're claiming the large corporations are doing. As they're being manipulated by the large animal corporations that are seeking to characterize the institutional exploiters as the bad people. Again, I don't agree with what those folks are doing. I don't think that that's a good use. I don't think that that's a morally justifiable use of their capital. But they're doing it because we demand it. If we stop demanding it, they'd stop doing it. And that's yet another reason why I think we've got to make it very clear. Veganism is the moral baseline. that if you aren't a vegan, you are participating in animal exploitation. Again, it's not a judgmental matter, and I want to be clear about that. I'm not making moral judgments about people, and I'm not saying the people who run these large organizations are evil people or whatever. I'm just saying I disagree with them. I mean, I'm sure that you know that the folks in these large groups are sincere, you know, believe that they're doing, you know, believe sincerely that they're doing good work, and I sincerely disagree with them. But again, it's also saying to those people who are not vegan who are listening to this, I'm not making a moral judgment about you. I'm just saying, you know, if you're concerned about animal exploitation, then before you start abstracting on it and thinking that, well, you know, the bad people are the people who are running the factory farms or the fur farms or the, you know, the whatever it is that you're concerned about, you know, before you start demonizing them, start thinking about yourself. Start thinking about the people who are around you. Start thinking about, you know, about your own exploitation of animals, because we are ultimately the exploiters. We are ultimately the people who create the demand. And that's what I wanted to say this morning.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. I also think it's really important to create a kind of dialectical approach to the question. I mean, for example, I completely agree with you that education has to be the foundation of it. And what I think needs to be done is that, you know, the more people we can educate and the more we can get to go vegan, the more people that we can then move into a critique of those kind of systemic structures that kind of make it easier for this kind of capital to exist. So I think that the two kind of feed on each other in really important ways. You know, attacking the roots of the problem through cutting demand, and also attacking the kind of structural processes that allow that kind of exploitation to take place.
But as you correctly point out, and it was a big caveat that you put in there that people need to focus on, that criticism of the structural problem doesn't occur until people are themselves aware on an individual level of what's going on, and they've made, you know, I mean, it's only when you start getting a critical mass of people see what's going on that critique can occur. So no, I agree with you completely. That I mean, that critique's got to occur, and you know, we need to be doing things like we need to be exposing the way in which we are manipulated to a considerable degree by you know, these large economic concerns. But we can't get away. You know, what troubles me is this almost deterministic sort of approach or response that many animal advocates give to the problem. Well, it's really them. It's not us. Mm-hmm. And I think that we really need to see it is us. And obviously, if we're ever going to change what they are doing, it is incumbent upon us to start thinking clearly. This is yet one of the many reasons why a clear message is required. That is, the message that is sent out by these organizations is just so hopelessly confused and confusing. I mean, when you, for example, when you announce a boycott of Kentucky Fried Chicken until they adopt controlled atmosphere killing or stunning, basically, it's not the chickens that have inherent value. It's not the sea animals that have inherent value. We use them as bargaining chips in some other sort of political game that's going on. And that once, you know, I mean, I thought it was appalling that, you know, once Kentucky Fried Chicken in Canada agreed to use to phase in controlled atmosphere killing over a period of years, PETA calls off the boycott. Well, what does that say? What does that say to the public? It's and in combination, they call off the boycott, and then they make statements like KFC in Canada cares about animal welfare. Well, what does that say to the public? I'm telling you what it's – I mean, you've got it – that's a rhetorical question. I mean, obviously, it's not rocket science to conclude that what that says to the public is that it's all right to eat there, or that there or at least some sort of moral block has been removed. And so – and then to the extent that these organizations say, well, we really encourage everybody to go vegan, you know, but – the problem is that, you know, when you're encouraging people to go vegan on one hand, but telling them that they can satisfy their moral obligations to non-humans by eating at these places, you know, where animal welfare is respected and, you know, where the boycott's been called off, you're really, I mean, you know, if you tell people they can do less to satisfy their moral obligations, they'll do less. And that's the problem. That's a big problem.
Absolutely. Completely agree there. Very, very well spoken. I mean, I can't imagine another way to really articulate it. It just gets at the point that we got to attack the demand. That's where we have to really make progress.
And that's what, you know, look, and that's Vegan Freak has probably made a greater impact. I mean, I really do believe, you know, and I use the example often, that Vegan Freak has probably, the podcast, primarily the podcast. I mean, all the work that you people are doing, but primarily the podcast has probably done more, and the forums that probably done more to sort of move lots of people. I mean, it'd be interesting to do an empirical study, because my guess is that what you've been doing on a shoestring budget over the past X years has probably moved more people in a vegan direction than, you know, all of these campaigns that these large organizations promote, you know, and spend lots and lots of money on. I mean, this is really not a question of money. I mean, you know, as you and Jenna have demonstrated, you know, if you've got an idea and you speak with a clear voice, and you make, you know, and you're clear and you're unequivocal, which you are, then, you know, you move people. You get some people you lose, a lot of people you gain, a lot of people you move. And so, you know, it's not a question of money. Movement's got tons and tons of money, tons and tons and tons of money. The problem is lack of a clear vision and lack of a clear voice. And that's really where we need to be moving.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate that.
Well, Jenna, I'm glad to see that the microphone's working now, and I was worried we weren't hearing from you. But anyway, well, listen, it's been great talking with the two of you, and I hope to be back soon.
Well, we would love to have you back. Thank you so much, Gary.
Awesome, and thank you, Gary, for being on, and for the kind words.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes me uncomfortable when he says that stuff.
I know.
I mean, it's flattering, but I also think, like, wow. I hope he's right. If he is, mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I would be very pleased to be making that kind of impact, you know?
Definitely. But he makes a lot of good points that we need to, I mean, if you're going to be a vegan, you need to be vegan for all of the animals. You know, you need to, if you're going to be an animal rights activist, you need for all of the animals. You can't just put, say, like seals are more important than fish.
Mm.
You know, you got to be against all animal exploitation.
Indeed.
It makes sense. It's the logical thing.
Yeah. Also the logic of fighting at exploitation at its foundation, which is the demand angle.
Exactly.
Right. So you go after the demand, and what he's saying is extremely obvious, but mm-hmm. I think because of the way, I think humans are like inherently incapable or not incapable. That's not the word. Incapable is the wrong word. I think most humans have a difficult time conceptualizing complex economic phenomena because they're a lot larger than any of us in our everyday experience. So mm-hmm. I think most people have a pretty good understanding of day-to-day kind of economic things and the mm-hmm. way the world operates. But I think when you start to get into the more macro level, people lose track of that. And I think that having lost track of those kinds of economic relationships is one of the reasons that I think the targets are often wrong. So what I think this is what Gary is trying to remind us to get back to by asking us to think about demand and think about our own process, our own place in that process of demand.
Exactly.
And how that drives a lot of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So indeed, I forgot to put the voicemail intro and outro into our soundboard.
Oh.
Oh my God.
So you just have to imagine.
No, 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 no.
No,
no. No, I can. Are you kidding me? I can make this shit happen.
Okay. Make it happen.
I can make. But I am magical. I can make it happen.
Time once again for some Vegan Freak voicemail. Maybe we'll hear from a hot chick
or a choice male.
Callers make us happy and help us keep our sanity. Even if all they wanna do is fucking complain about the shitload of profanity.
Hi, Bob and Jenna. This is Natalie calling from Maryland. I'm a sophomore in high school, and I first off just want to say how much I love you guys' podcast.
Thank you.
You're hilarious, and you give us the info straight up, and I just enjoy the way you present it. But anyway, I'm calling today because my mom is just on my last nerve, basically. She's trying to tell me that chicken doesn't have cholesterol and all this other crap. And I don't know, she's one of those people that she gets really defensive. And now she's telling me that because I'm a vegetarian, not vegan yet, but Nash is telling me that I can't have milk or cheese or any animal products in the house, and that's pretty much all we have to eat in the house. So I don't know what I'm going to do, but she's being really bitchy about it, and I just wanted to call because I know you guys are always there, and I need someone to understand my point of view in the situation. So I don't know. Let me know what you think. Maybe some tips on how to deal. I don't know, but I just wanted to call. Anyway, love you guys. Hope to hear another podcast soon. Bye.
So you probably left the voicemail like back in April.
Many of the voicemails are from June and July, I think.
Okay. Actually.
Maybe one or two from earlier, but.
Okay, so what to do about the situation? I mean, it's complicated because everybody's parents are different and everybody's mm-hmm. weird. I think what happens in these situations is ultimately that your relationship with your parents is tied up in interesting ways with food and other stuff. So it's never entirely clear how to go about dealing with it unless, you know, you really know both parties. And even then, it's tough to know.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. But I think all around, the best way to approach the situation is to, for one, be as informed as you possibly can mm-hmm. about why you want to do it and about nutrition and about what you want to eat.
I agree.
Because if you show them that you're serious about it, then I think they'll start taking you a lot more seriously. That you're not just doing this on the whim or to mm-hmm. be different or, you know, for whatever, you know, reason that they think that you're going to do it.
I think that's true too.
We had a guest on before, Claire Askew, who mm-hmm. wrote a book called Generation V, all about teenage vegans. If you want to go vegan while you're still living at home with your parents, and she has a lot of advice, and that's actually one of her pieces of advice is to be informed, and be serious about it. And also, you know, offer to cook for yourself. Say, you know, all right, look, I know you don't get it or whatever you don't, but, you know, I'll come up with meal ideas, things that you can do.
But she says she's at the point now where her mother won't even let, I mean, if I understand what she said mm-hmm. correctly, she's at the point now where her mother won't even let her have like vegetarian stuff in
right,
the house.
Right.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a tough situation. I mean, I would encourage her to go vegan, but I mean, vegetarians being hard is going to be hard enough
right,
for her
right,
at this
right.
point, right?
So, right. Either that or it's that her mom thinks she's going to want to turn everybody else vegetarian along with it. I can't tell which, oh my God, she's going to force everybody to take every, you know, animal product out of the house.
True. It could be that.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But it could also come from a place where, you know, her mother or your mother, if mm-hmm. you're listening, is just concerned. Like
sure.
she doesn't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't understand why you would do it. She was probably raised at a time when she was in school when they told her it was a healthy thing to do, to mm-hmm. eat meat and dairy and eggs and all that other crap. And so from her perspective, it's like, you know, this is good, healthy food, but, you know differently. And she may be concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
So allaying those fears is always hard. And then, you know, it's also hard for parents. Like if you're a teenager, you start to become your own human being.
Mm-hmm.
And that freaks them out too.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just weird for them. In that way, like for you to become your own person. So I think those are all the things that are kind of tied up with it. Now, that's not really any advice. Like, okay, I wish I had good
right.
advice for you, but I think that those are the things. I think the reason I can't give you exact advice is because I don't really know the situation precisely. But what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to give you some ideas as to why she might be reacting that way and how, if you know she's reacting that way, that might give you some ideas about how to then respond.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you need to look at it from a variety of angles. It could just be, you know, it could be this concern. It could be any number of things. It's just much become some weirdo.
Right, exactly.
Because there's always that concern too. People think,
definitely.
You know, we're a giant cult.
Definitely.
And we are. kind of. No, we're not really a cult. Cults have better sneakers than we do. So, anyway, she might be concerned that, you know, of all these things. So I think these are all the things to bring together. But ultimately, Jenna, I think Claire's book answers mm-hmm. a lot of these questions.
Yeah, it does. I mean, she lays out all the scenarios like your parents think you're going vegan because you want to join a cult, because you want to be weird or whatever. They think all these things, and then how to respond to them.
Yep.
So,
well, I think the thing maybe to do is slow exposure. You mm-hmm. know, so you start by saying, you know what, I think I want to go vegetarian, and you just maybe you get that idea out, And then you have the initial argument about it. It sounds like you've already had it. Mm-hmm. And you just let it sit for a little while. You know, and you be as vegan as you can be in the situation. I mean, I know some people are there probably like screaming at me right now saying that, you know, I should not be telling this person to not go vegan right away. Mm-hmm. But I think that'd be suicide for her. Mm-hmm. She's in a situation where she doesn't have control over her own food. Mm-hmm. And I'm not convinced that she could do it healthfully at this point.
Right, exactly.
So that's the reason I'm saying go slow at this point. Mm-hmm. I think for her, like, I'd rather see someone take their time, figure out where they need to be, and to do it healthfully, both mentally and physically, before they go vegan, so that they don't go vegan too rapidly, become sick, or not that I think going vegan can make you sick. For most people, it won't, but mm-hmm. become sick, or, you know, otherwise get into a bad place and then get frustrated with it and drop it.
Sure.
So I'd rather see someone go vegan for the long term.
Definitely.
In that situation. So I guess Definitely. My point is that go vegetarian, preferably go vegan, you know, when you can, and do the things that you can do in the situation that you're in, and try to keep making those inroads. Mm-hmm. No, but ultimately it might come down to the fact that, okay, you know, maybe you leave home when you're 18 and go to college.
Right.
And then you can do what you want.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it takes any parent usually a really long time to come to terms with it.
Yeah. You know, I don't think my parents were all that, took all that long, but I've
been... No, I mean, but if your parents are a different way, then there's most likely going to be some resistance or sure. not like being like, okay, whatever, at least, you know,
I think so.
You know, most of the time. And sometimes it takes a really long time for people to really understand that, or at least be cool with it to the point where you're not going to get shit all the time.
Yeah, I think so too. So I think just try to tough that out. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yep.
Well, good luck.
Yeah.
I know it sucks.
It does, but
good luck.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Sarah Porter, and I just started listening to your podcast. I've been vegetarian for over a year, and I went vegan like 4 months ago, I think.
Yay.
Like I said, I didn't say anything, but okay. I used to love cheese, and I think that there's some kind of addictive ingredient in it, like you said in your podcast, because it's really addicting. But I want you to know that to all those cheese fans out there who are vegans who love cheese but, you know, they can't get through the urge for it, there's vegan macaroni and cheese, and it is amazing. So there's a bunch of other things like soy slices and all that kind of junk. But I also want to say I'm also atheist. This is kind of controversial because I live in a really small hillbilly town.
Uh-oh.
Where one of my teachers told me that I'm going to hell if I don't love Jesus, and Jesus hates me because I don't eat animals that he gave me to eat. I thought I'd share that with you. Bye.
Jesus hates you because you don't eat the animals that he gave.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, the Jesus I learned about, you know, probably wouldn't hate you until you're going to hell for that.
I thought Jesus was accepting of everyone.
I thought so, too.
Wasn't that the part of the whole principle there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, but what do I know?
Right.
You know, I only went to Catholic school for 8 years where I was beaten. I was not molested, though, which...
That's good.
Must have been an ugly kid. anyway, yeah.
But yeah, macaroni and cheese. It's gotten a lot better, too, since we first went vegan.
Way better.
Not only like the prepackaged stuff that you can get now, the Leahy mac and cheese. Oh my God, it's so good.
Go fuck yourself, Mr. Leahy. Sorry, I just get Trailer Park
Boys. I know.
You say Leahy, I'm like, Trailer Park Boys.
I know.
We need that in the soundboard. Go fuck yourself,
yeah.
Mr. Leahy.
And then just like the stuff that you can make yourself at home. Like there's so many really good recipes out there right now for just incredible homemade mac and cheese. Cheese like with a Z. So you don't think I'm insinuating that it's real cheese. Okay. So yeah, it's really incredible. And we usually do give people the advice that if you're first going vegan, maybe don't try these right away,
mm-hmm.
especially the packaged ones, because you might think that they taste awful. Because when you first eat a lot of soy cheeses and that kind of thing, it has a little bit of an aftertaste that some people find a little bit off-putting at first. Or is it tastes... Since you've had cheese so recently, it tastes so different than what you're used to. But I think that overall the cheeses have gotten a lot better and do taste a lot more like regular cheese. Anyway, Tastes like more like dairy cheese, sorry. Not much to miss anymore.
I agree. I very much agree. I did find the Jim Leahy shitboard.
He doesn't realize what he's up against. He's about to enter the shit tornado to Oz.
What makes Sam Dorothy? Right, Mr. Leahy?
Right, Randy. You know what a shit barometer is, Bob?
Huh?
Measures the shit pressure in the air. You can feel it. Listen, Bubs. Hear that? Sounds of the whispering winds of shit. Randy just doesn't understand. I mean, I love him dearly, but I hate Ricky Moore. I just don't want to have to put up with that prick for the rest of my life. You know, he grew up as a little shit spark from the old shit flint, and then he turned into a shit bonfire, and then driven by the winds of his monumental ignorance, he turned into a raging shit firestorm. If I get to be married to Barb, I'll have total control of Sunnyvale, and then I can unleash a tsunami tidal wave that'll engulf Ricky and extinguish his shit flames forever. And with any luck, he'll drown in the undershit of that wave. Shit waves. Liquor makes me see it clearly, Randy. Julian's the leader. All he needs to do is be pointed.
Enough of the shit boring.
Well, there you go for all our Canadian listeners out there.
There's also a Bubbles soundboard.
Let's get it on.
Can you go fuck yourself?
Drunk male prostitute. Randy's got funny pants. Shitty this, shitty that. I know everything about your stuff.
Hi there.
How are you doing today? Can you do that for me, please?
Okay, so what were we talking? Oh, mac and cheese, yes.
Yes.
Sorry.
That's where we started.
Indeed. I want a Ricky soundboard. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, going to hell because you don't eat animal products.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure that could be the case.
You never know.
It very well could.
Dad, I'm Ricky, your son.
Why would it not be?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I don't know what you do when you're in a situation like that. Like, sometimes someone is so wrong. It's like, do you even want to bother?
Right.
Do you want to bother dealing with them? It just isn't.
Right.
It just isn't worth the time. It's like, God, are you really that dumb? Like, do you believe that shit?
Are you really that hateful?
Yeah, and that hateful too. But I think dumb and, well, I don't know. There are nice dumb people. I was gonna say dumb and hateful go together, but I don't think that's true.
No, not at all.
Because they're hateful smart people.
Of course.
They're lots of smart people are very hateful in my experience. I'd rather take a dumb person. No, I don't know. Tough call. A nice dumb person or a hateful smart person? Like, a hateful smart person can at least be kind of fun to argue with. If you get a hateful smart person, at least you maybe get some good insults coming out of them, right? I mean, like think about Vincent on the forums, right? Like, a hateful smart person. Like, this is Vincent to a T, right? No, he's not really hateful. He just plays hateful on the forums.
He's just mean as corn.
He is mean. All right. Moving on. Did we ever answer? Did Sarah have a question?
She was sharing to all the cheeseheads out there that there is really good macaroni cheese.
And by the way, for those of you that are, we do have a lot of vegetarian listeners out there. I do think that earlier you should not take what I said about Natalie's situation as permission to continue to be vegetarian, because I think for 95% of you, and be honest with yourself, because a lot of us aren't, be honest with yourself, you're probably in a position right now where you would go vegan, most of you. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna miss whatever, who cares, you're gonna miss stuff, it doesn't last long, get over it. Stop being a baby. No, but in all seriousness, if you know that it's time to go vegan, you should just go
you
vegan.
Just do it.
You should just do it. And this is something we talk a lot about in the new version of Vegan Freak, which will be out this fall.
It will.
And I think it's vital to just make that step. And it seems like a huge step before you take it, but it's really not.
Right. Once you're on the other side, it's all good.
It's all good. And, you know, we lived in the rural asshole of America for how long, and we were able to do it?
We were.
So, you know, we're not all that special.
Mm-mm.
I mean, we're special, but not special in any kind of special way.
We're special snowflakes.
Yeah, we are all unique and special snowflakes. That's what I used to tell my students. You know, you're each unique and special snowflakes. Now shut up and give me the answer. Okay, so moving on.
Hi, guys. This is Sean from San Diego, and I'm just calling because you guys are sick, and I have a bit of a, like, a weird little problem. My family, I'm vegan, but my family isn't, and we actually just got some chicks by mail, which is kind of weird and fucked up, but they send these chicks to us, chickens for eggs, and my stepmom thinks that I will eat the eggs because they're from very humanely raised chickens. Like, we're really showering them with love and stuff, but I don't want to. And I don't know how to tell her that's not acceptable in a nice way. Like, I don't eat eggs. I don't care how they were raised. I'm not sure how it's in blizzard, so I'm kind of nervous. And also, I'm really freaked out because we have, like, the chicks in a little, hot, like a warmed-up cage thing in the living room. And then tonight for dinner, we had chicken. Like, there was, like, a chicken roasting in the oven. Right, like, really, like, 20 feet away with these chicks, these baby chicks. And I was like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? You're going to, like, she dotes on these chicks. So then she'll, like, go out and buy a dead chicken to eat. It's, like, super, I don't know, super freaks me out. I'm, like, not really pleased with it right now. And, yeah. And also, she doesn't understand that I don't eat honey. So she'll buy breads with honey in them. And be like, oh, Sean, they're vegan. And they're not vegan. They have honey in them. Honey is from an animal. I don't eat that. And she doesn't get that either. And she's, I'm kind of, sorry, I just called the rant, but hey, you guys are sick and keep doing it, and I'm totally missing your podcast. But I think you guys just moved or something, so I'll forgive you this one time. All right, bye.
So, yeah, that is twisted on many, many levels. For A, the fact that you can get chicks shipped to you live is bizarre.
Well, I've done that for a long time.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
But it's just, it always boggles my mind. And then that you can be loving and caring for these baby chicks to raise them and then have a dead one in the oven. And to most people, that is completely normal.
I think it is. There's just a disconnect.
Yeah.
You don't put the two together.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like, our society makes it okay to eat the dead bird. So, but to have them, like, right so close to each other is just, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mind-boggling. So
it is. Well, I don't know, man. That's like, that's why culture in our society, it is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't make those connections as readily as they should.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way that, you know, first off, it's compartmentalized. Like, this is a living animal and this mm-hmm. is food, but the connection between the living animal and food is often missing.
Mm-hmm.
on the one hand. On the other hand, it's like, you know, no one really stops to think. We're just not encouraged to stop and think about all that.
Mm-mm.
So it's better if you don't ask questions. You just eat and don't think about it. And
exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
So what to do about that, man? I don't know. I mean, the chicks are already there. Like, I wouldn't feel, he was kind of saying that he doesn't think they should be nice to them. Is that? No.
He was saying that, his mom was like, well, why don't you eat these eggs?
Because
they're going to raise them for eggs.
Gotcha.
And she was like, well, you could eat these eggs because they're free range. And he's like, no. So he was asking, why shouldn't, well, what can I tell her to make her understand that I don't want to eat these eggs?
Yeah. Well, oh my God. See, that's tough. I mean, you may not be able to tell her anything that will make her understand why you don't want to eat the eggs.
Right.
But I think what you could do is explain to her that it's the idea that this is an animal that clearly people in your family were loving and caring for,
mm-hmm.
that is now kind of existing solely to produce things for you. And that you have a problem with that because of what that does and what that means about where the animal is in the scheme of things. It's like, essentially, you know, what I would say is, like, make an argument about animal slavery, but don't use those terms.
Right.
Because I think the terms, like, for people who, I think that term is so, it's a little too hot. I mean, I think it immediately mm-hmm. turns people off.
It does.
So I think that it can be explained. I think that it's the sort of thing you have to go with a little carefully to kind of lay out why. Because I think a lot of people don't really get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of people are like, okay, these chickens aren't being abused. There's nothing wrong. They're going to be able to run in our yard. Why not?
Right.
Eat the eggs.
Right. Well, you're not just against the abuse of animals. You're against the use
right.
of animals. And by eating their eggs, you're using the animals to produce eggs for you. And you mm-hmm. just don't agree with that. And therefore, you're not going to eat the eggs. Yep. Doesn't matter how, you know, how well they're raised at all.
Exactly. It objectifies the animal. It makes the animal's only purpose in life is to serve you.
Right. Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And I think you even said something like, you know, you're against eating all eggs. Doesn't matter. So you said it there, like, just completely simply. All animal products, like including
Stella,
honey.
You're the smartest person I know.
Well, thank you. New Jenna sounds. It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were watching 30 Rock, and I would occasionally hear one and think, wow, this is cool. I got to grab this one. So they're good. They're good, Jenna sounds. We have Bob sounds. Like this.
Who here can tell Bob what critical thinking means?
See? We need Jenna sounds.
Exactly.
Okay. And moving on.
And I just want to tell you that I can't wait to meet you again and hang out with you. And, I think it's going to be fun. And, what else to say? Meh.
Meh.
What about?
Meh. Meh. Meh.
That was Denise. I'm mom. Okay. Yeah, old man Bob. Bye.
For those of you who are listeners of our show, you might recognize that voice as Cade, who's called in several times with some very astute questions for a 10-year-old.
Indeed. Indeed.
And yes, he listens to our show with his mother's permission.
He does. Yeah.
For those out there who think we're corrupting the youth.
Well, I'm sure we are, but it's always nice to have a listener like Cade who is extremely dedicated. And when we met Cade...
Mm-hmm.
Every time we met Cade, he talks to me about the show, and he knows things about the show that I don't know.
Yes.
I don't remember. He's right.
Yeah.
I mean, if I think he was asking me the other day about something and I couldn't remember it, but I thought hard about it. I was like, you know what? He's right. Like, he was asking me about something we had done on the show, and I remembered it, but it was a long time ago. So, Cade's a good listener. He's a good guy. And, I really enjoyed meeting him.
So. Yep.
Good
we finally got to meet Cade.
Absolutely. Well,
Yeah.
Denise is okay, too. And so
so is Kyla. Yeah.
Denise and Kyla are
But we will try to have Cade on every once in a while.
Yeah, maybe.
See what he has to say.
Maybe. We'll see. We don't want to put any pressure on.
Of course not.
So if he wants to be on, he's welcome to be on. If he doesn't, we'll see if the creative mood strikes him.
Okay.
If the fire... if he's got the internal fire, but he could just call us and talk to us anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. It's all good. We like to hear from Cade. What else?
You know what? I think that's it.
Good, because
I'm hungry,
and I know this is going to shock everybody, but I have to pee. And I had to pee before the show started, but I was like, you know what? Let's just start this thing. Let's get this party started.
The dogs are being good. The dogs were good through the whole show. That's because we have the windows closed and the air conditioning on.
Yep.
And now they shouldn't be as bothering as much. The UPS guy always comes in the mornings.
At the same time.
The same time, all the time. And he used to come in the afternoon sometimes at our old place. And we never record the show in the mornings.
Ever. Oh, hell no.
We're never that with it in the mornings, ever.
If it were a morning show, really. Jenna. Yeah, it really would not work.
Not at all.
Mornings are not our thing. So we probably don't need to tell you that because, I don't know, we just aren't morning people.
Right. And now we won't have any ATVs.
No ATVs.
No snowmobiles.
No, this room is echoey, though. I need to put up some of the insulating, the sound.
Yeah.
Boom. I can hear an echo, and you probably can too. The show probably sounds different.
A little bit, yeah.
So it sounds different to me. I don't like it, but whatever.
We'll work on it.
We'll get it going.
You get right on that, Bob.
I'm gonna go ahead and come in on Sunday.
There you go.
Take care of that. And I'll make sure to also fill out my CVS reports.
Okay, good.
So, yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for your patience with us. We have no intention of quitting.
Not at all.
We're just, we just get busy, and it's like hard for us to pull the other time to do it.
Yeah.
I know it's like, okay, you sit down and you just talk for however long you talk for and ramble on about stupid shit and make fun of Portland. How hard could that be? You know, but that's not the hard part. Mm-mm. The hard part is getting everything to do. So, we're going to work on that. We hope to be around more regularly as we have promised before.
Yes, we have.
So, on our last show, we had said that we were going to start a more regular kind of podcast.
We are, especially for subscribers.
That's right. So I want to do that starting soon. So let's see where we're at. Anyway, have a good whatever until we talk to you again.
Yes. Stay vegan and freaky as always.
That's about it for this week. Let's go.
Bye. They say it's
Something weird is going on.